And everywhere that Mary went, the Lamb was sure to go. I am the Lamb. Mary is my wife. Welcome to another serendipitous episode of Nothing Specific with your boy, Trevor David Houchin. Serendipitous because you need this. You need this right now. But I need it too. I need it too. Took my wife's hand today. Looked her deep in her eyes. And I basically said, babe, listen, please. I'm trying my best to be normal, win your love and affection back. We took pictures with my son today. He turned one yesterday. So the three of us went and took some mall pictures today. The three of us together, like a family, right? We're taking pictures like a family, me, my wife, and my son. It's all beautiful. It's all wonderful. Like a family. I got my arm around my wife. And then she drives me back home, and the last thing she says is, by the way, I'm never moving back home again. You know that, right, Trevor? You know I'm not moving back home. Ever. So why did we take pictures like a family today? Like, why? I don't know, man. I don't know. I can't figure out if it's bad that, we're not living together. I'm not really sure if I'm lonely or not. Like, I'm alone right now, right? It's, what is it, 9:01. It's 9:01 p.m. And I'm alone. She's not here with me. I'm alone. And, it's been this way every night for the past 5.5 months. And it's not bad. It's not bad. It's really not bad. I don't hate it. I don't even dislike it anymore. I don't even feel lonely, really, to be honest with you. And that's, truth be told, like, that's scary. It's scary. It's scary to me that I don't feel lonely. I don't want to let go of the desire I have for myself, my wife, and my son to be a family. I don't want to let go of that desire, because I feel like if I let go of this desire that I have for us all to be together, then who am I? Then what am I? Then where do I go? Then I'm unhinged, untethered from the earth. Then I'm like floating out in space. At least now I've got the self-created false reality that, I'm someone's husband, and I've got a wife, and I've got a son. I've got that self-created thing here by myself in my apartment. My wife's not here. My son's not here. Neither one of them has been set foot in this apartment for 5 months, more than 5 months. But I'm holding on to this idea that, oh yeah, I've got a wife. Yeah, I'm married. Got a wife, got a daughter, got a son. But, the idea of officially, not even speaking in terms of divorce, just me officially recognizing, bro, your wife's not here and she's not coming back. Just the idea of dealing with that reality, even though dealing with that reality, dealing with just the, you know, the ideological concept of the fact that she's not coming back, it's not different. It's not different than my daily reality. My daily reality is she's not here. But here I am, you know, here I am in Japan, you know, thus the intro to the podcast. Everywhere that Mary went, that lamb was sure to go. My wife came back to Japan. I came back to Japan. I don't know if like I don't know if I can't be sure what my intentions were coming back here. I don't know. I wanted to see our son. That's the reality, Trevor. That's the truth. That's the truth. I didn't spend a lot of time thinking, okay, I'm going to go back to Japan, my wife and I and my son, we're going to be a family, and I'm going to, you know, be, you know, family man, and, you know, I wasn't thinking that stuff. I wasn't preparing myself for that stuff. The only real thing I was preparing myself for was to come back to Japan. Come back to Japan, see my son. And I've done that. But, you know, I was surreptitiously, chopped off by my wife. Like, you know, she all but said, hey, bro, check it out. You know, I guess it's all right that you came. But, you know, we're going to go. Glad you came, bro, but we're going to go. You can stay here, but we're going to go elsewhere. And I was like, what am I supposed to do now? I came here. Like, I'm here. Like, I left everything, and I came here. And now you're leaving, so... Alright. It's been that way ever since. But, you know, listen, I'm not gonna lie. And, the thing is, as a man... Well, you know, listen, let me not speak for all men. Me, as a man, what I've done for a lot of my relationships for, you know, a pretty large portion of every relationship I've been in, what I've done is muted my feelings, muted and diluted my emotions, definitely for the woman. So she wasn't aware of how much, you know, I cared about her, how much I loved her, how much I wanted to be with her, how great I thought she was, how great I thought she made me feel, how just magnificent I thought she was, or, you know, how much she put me on top of the world. I would hide that from her for fear that she would take that energy, take that... what do I want to say? You know, take my golden nuggets and run away with them. Just, you know, I'm not saying I'm some kind of gift, but, you know, take my gift or take my, you know, this emotional prize that I had generated as a result of her. You know, this great emotional wellspring of, oh, I like you so much, I love you so much. I was afraid that they would take that and be like, oh, well, thanks very much. I'm on my way. I'm out the door. And leave me with nothing. So what I would do is, you know, let's imagine I've got 12 golden nuggets of sparkling, pristine love emotion. SPLEs. Sparkling, pristine, love, emotion, energy. Splees. Splees. Okay, splees. Sparkling, pristine, love, emotion, energy nuggets. I've got spleens. 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 Sparkling, pristine, love, emotion, energy nuggets. Let's say I've got a dozen spleens, right? That I've generated on my own, right? I would only share four with the girl. I would keep the other eight for myself, thinking, no, I can't share these other eight. Because if I share these other eight, then, what if she takes, if I share all dozen, what if she takes 11 or all of them and then I've got nothing left? So what I would do is I would share four of the spleens with the girl and keep the other eight hidden. See, but what happens then is you're only sharing four spleens. You're only sharing four spleens. What girl wants four puny spleens? What girl wants four puny spleens? So you've got these four that you're sharing, and it's not enough. It's not enough. She wants more. She wants more. It's not enough. It's not enough. She wants more. But you're only brave enough to share the four. And of course, it's not enough. So what does she do? Let's say she's got 12 spleens. She decides to share two with you. Okay? She decides to share two of her spleens, sparkling. Oh my God, what did I call it? Sparkling, plasmatic, love, energy, emotion nuggets. I forget. Sparkling, paradoxical, love, energy, emotion nuggets. What is it? I don't remember. Anyway, she only shares two of her spleens with you. You're only sharing four of her spleens, of your spleens with her. So between you, the two of you have 24 spleens, but you're only sharing six. You share four with her, so she decides to only share two with you. Then you're pissy because she's only sharing two with you. Then you take away three of yours. Then you're only sharing one of your spleens. She notices that you've taken away three of yours. She takes away both of hers. You're sharing your one spleen with her. She's not sharing any spleens. It's done. It's done. And then you go back to your stupid room and you look at the other eight spleens that you've been not sharing and wonder why you didn't share them. You got to be brave enough to share all your spleens. You got to be brave enough to share all your spleens. You can't just share a third or a quarter of your spleens. Because had you shared your 12 spleens with her, she might have shared her 12 spleens with you. Then you've got 24 spleens. But instead, you shared four. She shared two. You shared two. She shared none. You're left with eight. You're left with your eight spleens. And then you get back to your room, and those spleens are not quite so sparkling anymore. You don't even want them. You don't even want them. You gotta share your spleens, man. But we're terrified. We're terrified to share our spleens. We're terrified to share our spleens. Nobody wants to share all their spleens. Except then she's out the door, and then you go back to your room, and you pick up your eight spleens, and you chase her down the block. Look, I've got eight more spleens. I've got eight more spleens. I didn't show you these spleens. Look at these spleens. These spleens are even better than the first stupid four spleens I had. Forget about those four. Look at these. And then she's looking at your eight spleens, and she's like, well, why didn't you share the spleens, bro? Where were these spleens? Where were they? Well, I had them in my room. Like they were, I was just about to share them with you. I had, they were like in my closet, in my room, under the clothes, next to the basket, and I was gonna bring them out. But then it looked like you were only sharing two of your spleens. So I wasn't ready to share all my spleens. And then she says, "Well, bro, you are only sharing four of your spleens. I thought you only had four spleens, bro. You shared four spleens with me, bro. So, you know, quite naturally, I shared two with you. I didn't know you had these other eight." "Oh, but I did. I had these other eight." "Well, you know, you should have shared them. You should have shared them." I gotta learn how to share my spleens, man. I gotta learn how to share my spleens. I'm trying to learn how to share my spleens with my wife, you know, because like I said, I started this out by saying I had a dozen spleens. I had. But I probably only shared about eight with my wife, seven. On a daily basis, six. Should have shared my spleens. Listen, do children who are over 2 or 3 years old, they've been walking for a year, 2 years, right? They've got all the energy in the world. Listen, do they deserve to be pushed in a stroller? Like, who do they think they are? Like, come on. Come on. I've been walking 50 years. You learned how to walk 2 years ago. Like, you've got the energy, you're a volcano of energy. And I'm pushing you in a stroller? Let me get in the stroller. Dude, you push me. Get out of here. This, something, pushing little, you know, three, four. Sometimes it looks like, I can see mothers sometimes pushing their kids in the stroller. And the kid looks like he's 14. What are you doing, dude? Go home and vacuum the house. Your mom's pushing you around in a stroller. Teaching kindergarten now. Got a kindergarten class on Friday afternoons. What is it? 10 to 12 about? I guess each class is about 45, 50 minutes. Taking it seriously though. I'm trying to offer these kids my, you know, all my spleens. You know, I'm in there, I'm jumping up and down, I'm singing "This Old Man," I'm singing "Head, Shoulders, Knees and Toes," I'm singing what's the other one? "This Old Man," "Head, Shoulders," and yeah, one more. There's one more I always try to sing. Good morning, hello and how are you? But I want to add some more stuff to my repertoire. Like, I was thinking about Frank Sinatra's "My Way" for the kids. "I did it my way." Yeah, I don't know. Maybe that's not right. Maybe that's not right. But yeah, I'm teaching these kindergartners, and I like it. You know, I like it. I like it, I'm saying. I like it. I don't love it. But I also don't hate it. I don't love it, but I also don't hate it. I do like it. You know, they're cute. You know, they're cute. They're kind of funny without knowing they're funny. Like, that's the thing about kids. Like, how old, or humans, how old are you when you recognize how to be funny? Right? Like when you're able to think in your mind, okay, if I do this thing or say this thing or whatever, you know, do this gesture, people are going to laugh. When does that develop? That ability, that skill? Yeah, but these kindergartners, they're cute, they're funny. They're open, you know, they're completely unjaded. There might be one or two jaded ones in the classroom, one or two jaded ones. How are you jaded when you're five? Like, what are you jaded about at five? They're willing. Again, the majority, class of 20 students, maybe one or two of them are, I don't know, jaded and shy. I don't know. They don't really know, like, much of anything, you know? They don't know anything, kind of. And I like that. I like a person, child or adult, who recognizes that he doesn't know so much. I appreciate that. There's like an openness to that. Like, people who think they know so much, they're just bores. They're just a bore, more than anything else. Right? People who think they know so much, they're just boring. But people who do know a lot, but don't really know that they know a lot. Oh. Very interesting. Interesting. Those people are interesting. People who do know quite a bit, but aren't aware really of the fact that they know so much, or maybe more specifically, they know quite a bit, but because they know quite a bit, they're aware of how much more there is to know that they don't know. So they come across like they're constantly exploring. They're explorers, adventurers. Like, always, like, you know, learning. Like, always, like, you know, whatever it is you say to them, they didn't know that. Wow. Oh, man, that is really? Are you serious? That is super interesting. Wow. I didn't know that. Whoa. Those people are interesting to me, even if they know a lot. But the people who know everything and you can't say anything to them that they don't already know, you know, I know a couple people like that. Like, anything you say, they, you know, literally they'll say, I know. Oh, I want to smush their Adam's apple. You know, I want to smush their Adam's apple. People like that have almost no spleens to offer. Kindergartners, they're just so eager. You know, the majority of them, they're so eager. They know they don't know anything. They know that. Can you imagine a kindergartner who thinks he knows stuff? No, you can't. There are none. There are none. There are no kindergartners who think they know anything. They don't think, they don't. Kindergartners don't go around acting, yeah, I know. I knew that. I knew. No, man, kindergartners aren't like that. There's no pretense with them, like they know everything. They what they know is they don't know a damn thing, and they're eager to know. You know what I mean? Since they're aware of the fact that they don't know anything, they're aware of that. So, they're eager to know some shit. Ooh, sorry, they're eager to know something, and that is a really attractive characteristic, as far as I'm concerned, in human beings. It's just a characteristic, an attractive characteristic, an attractive trait. Somebody who is eager to learn, somebody who wants to know something that you've said, that you've got to say. And kindergartners just have that down. You know, that's what they, you know, they're little know-nothings. Kindergartners, they're little know-nothings, but because they know they're know-nothings, they're so endearing. Whereas know-everythings, you want to smush their Adam's apple. You want to smush their Adam's apple. The thing with kindergartners, basically the only thing, seriously, the only thing that, the only, what can I say, reluctance or repulsive? you can't put the word repulsive together with a kindergartner. The kindergartner, that's not cool. I don't know. I don't want them touching me. I don't want them touching me, kindergartners. I don't want them putting their hands on me. I don't want that. I don't want them touching me. God knows. Only God knows what a kindergartner has been touching. I can't, you know, that's part of their endearing nature, though. You know, they'll touch anything because they haven't learned. They haven't learned that they're not supposed to touch doo-doo, regardless of, you know, anything. They want to touch it. They want to touch it. They want to examine it. They want to explore what it's about. They want to see what it feels like. What's its consistency? What if they touch it and what if they put it in their mouth? I can't be a part of that. I can't be a part of that. I don't want them touching me, kindergartners. At any given moment in kindergarten class, you know, four of them are picking their noses and eating it. I can't be a part of that. I can't be a part of that. I'd vomit in class. I would vomit in class. And that would be, you know, that would be the beginning of the end of that. So I just don't want them touching me. Anything else I can, you know, they can do. But, ugh, you know, I don't want them touching me, God. So, you know, it's hard to find here. Okay, so listen, I'm going to make an admission. I'm going to come clean. Jeez, I can't, you know. The podcaster who can't speak English. I'm going to make a confession. That's it. Have a confession? What is it? Have? I'm going to have a confession. I'm going to make a confession. I'm going to confess. I'm going to confess. I don't like Shibuya. Sorry. I don't like it. I think it's a big mess. Shibuya. And it isn't necessarily that I'm against the crowds. I don't know what. Like, okay, so I'm from New York, right? We got Times Square. That is the New York, or, you know, even America. That's the American equivalent of Japan's Tokyo Shibuya, Times Square. It seems to me there's something to do in Times Square. You know, the Broadway is right in the area. What else? I don't know what else, really. I know in Times Square there's shops, lights, restaurants, street performers. There are no street performers in Shibuya that I'm aware of. Although, you know, there are the girls in the maid costumes, I guess. But there are no... Ouch. There are no street performers. But that's not what I don't like about it. I don't know. It seems it's ugly. That's it. Shibuya is ugly to me. It's ugly. I don't think Times Square is ugly. I've been in Times Square 1,000 times. But I don't, for some reason, I don't think it's ugly. It doesn't strike me as ugly. Shibuya strikes me as ugly. Which is hard to believe because, well, I guess, it, see, that's the point. It's not hard to believe, actually, because Japan, you know, the thing, one of the things Japan is lacking is any, you know, any distinguishing sense of architecture, aside from the temples and the shrines. Besides that, like, the Japan's architecture is nothing. There, you can't use the word architecture to describe Japan's construction aesthetic. You can't use that word, architecture. Japan is devoid of architecture except for its temples and shrines. And Shibuya, it's just a concrete mess to me. It's just a mess. Like I said, Times Square has street performers, it's got Broadway. Just like New York City in general, it's got a personality. There's an energy about it. More than just, oh, we're in Times Square. There's some other energy about it. Shibuya, I've yet to put my finger on the pulse of what Shibuya has going on energetically. I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is. And I've been to Shibuya quite a few times since I've been here. 40 times, 30, 50. I don't know. I don't, even, I can extrapolate. Tokyo. That's how I feel in general about Tokyo. I can't put my finger on what Tokyo's electricity, what Tokyo's energetic vibe is. New York has it from top to bottom. And I'm sorry I'm making this comparison, but as a New Yorker, I don't know what I can compare Los Angeles, nothing, but different. Los Angeles's nothingness is different than Tokyo's nothingness. Los Angeles's nothing energy is very different than Tokyo's nothing energy. Because it seems to me, Los Angeles isn't even trying. That's what I think. That's what I think. Street level LA, they're not even trying. It's not even it's a city that's not even trying to create any kind of aura, any kind of vibe, any kind of electricity, any kind of scene, any kind of personality. It's like Los Angeles has given up. They're not even trying. There are tiny little areas of LA that kind of trying. Silver Lake, all right. Topanga Canyon, I think so. Venice Beach for sure. If Venice Beach, okay, downtown LA, kind of, but they haven't figured it out yet. It's ugly. Downtown LA is ugly. But downtown LA is kind of trying to figure something out. North Hollywood up in the valley, kind of trying to figure something out. But they've been trying for a while, and it's got something. Not gonna lie. No, North Hollywood's got something. It's got some kind of community feel. People who live in North Hollywood, there's a little bit of stick togetherness up there. Van Nuys, maybe. I don't know what it could be though, besides the Mexicanness of it. I don't know. Venice Beach, most definitely. But these are all little parts of LA, and this is the same issue, I guess, with Tokyo. But I'm not familiar enough with Tokyo to know what each little section is. Not familiar with it enough to know what each little section is yet. But I can't find it. Whatever it is, I can't find it in Tokyo. The people. Yeah, people in New York are in a rush. Absolutely. Everybody's in a rush to get wherever they're going. But there's still, the people are still exuding a certain amount of warmth. Let's start there. Let's start there. New Yorkers are exuding, even in their rushed state, they're exuding some warmth, some personality, some desire to know, to get to be known. I don't know, what are they called, Tokyoites? Tokyoites have none of that, bro. Sorry. Sorry. Tokyoites exude nothing.
That's my feeling.
That's my feeling. Tokyoites exude nothing, nothing, nothing. No sense of joy, no sense of wonder, no sense of excitement for living in Tokyo, no sense of having just seen, you know, some really cool piece of art, having just come from a really cool concert, trying to get laid, you know. The men and women don't acknowledge one another. At least in New York, dudes are catcalling, turning around, looking at women's butts. You know, there's a sense of, we're all cool, we're all sexy. We all know we're all cool and sexy. So we're all cool and sexy. Tokyo doesn't have any of that. Zero. Like none. Like none, man. It's, you know, listen, to be really honest, it's a bit of a drag. It's a bit of a drag, Tokyo. It's a bit of a drag. It is very, very definitely a point A to point B city. There's nobody. Nobody seems to be interested in what is between, you know, where they've just left and where they're trying to get to. Nobody seems interested in, like, the spontaneity of the moment, you know, the potential for meeting somebody hot, meeting somebody interesting, seeing some interesting spectacle, seeing somebody potentially famous walking down the street, hearing some dope music coming out of some storefront or some apartment building. There's none of that, man. There's none of that in Tokyo. There's none of that. Nobody seems to care or know where the museums are. Again, there's no Broadway, and Broadway is a very important part of New York City. There's no, what I've been looking for in Tokyo is like a Lower East Side vibe. I don't know. I don't know where people go in Tokyo to get their kicks. Yeah, there's Roppongi. There's Roppongi, there's Shibuya, you know, Ginzu, Ebisu, you know, Ginzu. Ginza, Ebisu, but I don't know. It's not interesting, man. It's disappointing. Really. It doesn't suck by any means, because on the flip side, it's super clean. The food, the different, well, there isn't, well, yeah, there is a lot of different choices of food. The overwhelming majority of it is Japanese. I mean, let's face it. But it's all, you know, anywhere you go in Tokyo, you're going to get high quality food. That's a good thing. You know, that's a good thing. Anywhere you go, you're going to get high quality food. There's so many food choices. Like restaurants, I mean, just stacked one on top of each other, literally. I think Tokyo's got the best food scene in the world. Now, I haven't been anywhere, man. I haven't been to Paris. I haven't been to London. I haven't been to Berlin. You know, I haven't been to most places. But for me to imagine a city with a better food scene than Tokyo seems hard to do. So it's got great food, it's got great transportation, although it's tough to figure out. It's clean. What I also like about Tokyo is there are lots of different levels to it, meaning there's lots of stairways and hills. Whereas, you know, the majority of New York, you know, below 70th Street? I guess it depends on what side you're on. It's flat. the majority of New York. It's pretty flat. Tokyo's got hills and stuff and staircases and different gradients. And another cool thing I do like about Tokyo is the tiny, tiny, tiny little alleyways. Tiny, tiny, tiny little alleyways and stuff. I think that's cool. Listen, I'm not going to lie. I need to investigate it more. I need to investigate it more, get away from Shibuya and Shinjuku and, you know, the shrine, the palace. Get away from these places and go to some different places. Figure it out. But so far, I don't know. I don't know. Not exactly my thing. Not exactly my thing. Yeah. Eating some dark chocolate. Some frozen blueberries. Drinking some tea. Being alone. Being alone. That's what I got, guys. Appreciate you listening. It's been another serendipitous episode of Nothing Specific with your boy, Trevor David Houch. Peace and blessings, family.